Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT.
Welcome back to Banking Weekly with me, Patrick Jenkins. This week, we'll discuss the arrival of a new investment banking boss at UBS.
Andrea Ossel is a great deal maker, but he still has to win his stripes in terms of management.
We'll also look at the latest predictions for the shrinkage of investment banking generally.
The market is underestimating both the pace and the scale of shrinkage in the investment banking sector.
And finally, the latest tribulations for Royal Bank of Scotland and its Coutts private banking arm.
Coutts is the private bank to the Queen, and actually that's particularly relevant now because these are failings over how they dealt with politically exposed people.
Joining me in the studio today are the FT's retail banking correspondent Charlene Goff and investment banking correspondent Daniel Schaefer. First, Daniel, to UBS, where I guess for once UBS, which has had a string of bad news for the past few years, had a bit of good news to report. They've hired a big name from the investment banking world to be new co-head of investment banking at the Swiss bank.
Yeah. One can say this has been really a surprise move. We have expected that Sergio Ermotti, the CEO, would do some more management restructuring at the investment bank. But what people have thought would be that he would replace Carsten Kangeta, the head of the investment bank.
Instead, he was there when the kind of rogue trading scandal happened and when, you know, other problems in the crisis world.
Indeed, yeah. It wasn't all his fault or anything, but people blamed it on him. Yeah. Instead, what he did was he brought in Andrea Ossel as co-head of the investment bank to sit alongside Carsten Kangeta. And Andrea is, I guess one could say, one of the best known and most successful deal makers in Europe.
And he's been at Merrill Lynch or Bank of America Merrill Lynch for like 20 years.
For 20 years or so, yeah.
So career long kind of.
He's considered as a real rainmaker, and he's brought in, the deals he's done have brought in hundreds of millions of fees for Merrill Lynch in the past.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very well known name. But he's not really a manager. I mean, at Merrill, he, as far as I know, he doesn't run a team or anything. He's kind of just goes out and does deals and is very well kind of thought of. But he doesn't have that management kind of expertise necessarily to kind of co-head a massive investment bank.
It might also be the reason why what they've done is a co-head structure and not just replace Carsten Kangeta with Andrea Ossel. Andrea Ossel is a great deal maker, but he still has to win his stripes in terms of management, and he has to prove that he is able to lead such a great organization.
Yeah, because at Merrill he's been through phases where I think he's kind of had management responsibilities, but it's always been he's always returned to more advisory roles. Various stories that I've heard, but you know, sometimes it's been his own kind of instigation almost, that he's got fed up with the bureaucracy of the management side. And one thing is pretty certain, I suspect that UBS is going to be a fairly tough management job, given the political pressure that UBS is under and back home in Switzerland and all of the restructuring that's going on in the investment bank.
The question is also, will he, by bringing in somebody like Andrea, who wants to really use the bank's balance sheet to underwrite deals and to go for some riskier businesses as well, there's a question whether this is going to trigger a political backlash in Switzerland as well, where there's a lot of skepticism about the investment bank, and which is the whole reason why Sergio Ermotti is scaling back the riskier parts of the investment
bank. On the trading side,
the trading side in particular. Yeah.
So I guess maybe he feels that he's earned some political capital that he can go and redirect the investment bank and maybe take on a bit of risk where necessary. UBS, of course, is saying that they've never really, you know, retreated from this side of the business, the kind of M&A advisory and kind of equities capital markets deals. They've done lots of transactions over the past few years. But one thing's for certain, they're going to be, I would have thought they're going to be doing quite a few more as a result of Mr. Ochel's arrival. And as we reported this morning, you know, he's going to be bringing some big clients with him. Seems almost certain that he's going to be bringing Santander and UniCredit, his two kind of key clients from Italy and Spain, with him. So I think it's, you know, as we said at the beginning, probably a rare piece of good news for UBS. Let's move on to the second story. It was kind of not unrelated topic of investment banks generally. As we said, UBS is probably an extreme example of an investment bank that's shrinking, but it's hard to find one that isn't shrinking really globally. And the kind of new predictions out from in a survey published today from Morgan Stanley and Oliver Wyman, a joint kind of annual review of the industry. What are the kind of main findings?
The main finding really is that the market is underestimating both the pace and the scale of shrinkage in the investment banking sector. And the numbers show that or predict that in the next 12 to 24 months, there will be another $1 trillion of balance sheets cut off by the investment banks. That's another 7% of the whole balance sheet.
Now, this is kind of compliance with new regulations, Basel III kind of preparations, and US kind of Dodd-Frank stuff.
Indeed. The main reason that's triggering this is the regulator, which is pushing for much faster changes than we've seen in the past. And the other reason that's triggering this, particularly in Europe, is the Eurozone debt crisis, which since last summer has basically shown to banks that it's no longer sufficient to just cut at the margins. They have to really go either invest in business lines, or if they don't see the necessary scale and they don't have the necessary scale in these business lines, then they have to completely exit them. And banks have taken much bolder steps since last summer in particular to actually exit some businesses.
Now, does this matter at all to anybody really, that the banks are going to shrink enormously? I'm sure a lot of listeners would be thinking, well, maybe it's a good thing that it was an overblown sector, over leveraged, and it's about time it shrunk back to a kind of shadow of what it used to be. Why does it matter?
Two things, really. The first thing is it's going to definitely bring back the fear that there will be less lending available, say, to corporates, which is a big business line for investment banks. So that's going to be one fear. And the big question there is whether if some of the investment banks are no longer using their balance sheet to, say, lend for corporates or exiting such businesses, whether actually the so-called disintermediation will happen, meaning that markets are going to provide for, say, with bond financing and other instruments for the leverage that banks are withholding.
And is that going to explain the whole $1 trillion total, or are other things at play as well that are going to be more missed, if you like, more problematic for the kind of broader economy to adjust to?
One thing I guess that's going to be interesting to see is whether actually the banks are going to come back to their old return on equity and profit targets,
Are much lower already in terms of targets than they ever were kind of pre-crisis.
Yeah, they are. I mean, on average, they have fallen to 8% last year, which compares
the actual performance
return on equity, which compares to historic return on equity. So we're way above 10%, more like 13 or 14%. Yeah. And actually, one interesting thing about the report is that Morgan Stanley and Oliver Wyman are saying they think that actually the shrinkage that's happening in the investment banking sector is a good thing for the sector as a whole, and it's going to help them to get back to return on equity targets, which is rather surprising because everybody's thinking revenues in the sector will be down for quite a long time and profits will be depressed for many years to come. But they are saying actually, by moving out of those businesses where they don't have scale or which aren't profitable for the individual bank, they are able to concentrate on those businesses that for them are profitable and are good for them.
And I guess less competition in those other areas means that the prices will go up.
And they are also predicting more revenues in the investment banks. Actually, the trend will be reversed, the trend that we've seen in the past few years, that revenues have been shrinking dramatically. And they are saying with an economic recovery underway in some regions globally, they think that revenues can come back and can grow again. again in the next few years.
Okay, a rare positive note in the investment.
Indeed, which is not what everybody else is saying.
No, well, let's see whose predictions come true on that. Charlene, we've been ignoring you in the corner there. Very sorry. You're at the heart of this third story, though. Yet more bad news for Royal Bank of Scotland, the state-owned British bank. This time, its private banking arm, Coutts, probably best known for being bankers to the Queen and so on. But they're in trouble.
Well, exactly.
Not financial trouble necessarily, but regulatory trouble.
They've been dealt a big fine this morning, Monday morning, so kicking off the week on a fairly bad note for them. The fine is £8.75 million and it relates to weaknesses in their anti-money laundering procedures. And you mentioned right there, and you know, everyone, the first association you have is that Coutts is the private bank to the Queen. And actually, that's particularly relevant now because these are failings over how they dealt with politically exposed people. So overseas politicians, members of the royal family. The FSA has been very critical this morning, saying that their procedures, their checks for these high-risk customers were woefully inadequate, and they were inadequate for many years, I think between 2007 and 2010.
So what exactly did they miss? Or, I mean, who was put at risk because of these failings?
Well, they said there wasn't any actual money laundering that happened as a result of this. They haven't uncovered anything, but it was just the potential for there to be, basically essentially saying they didn't know, they didn't have enough certainty where the money was coming from to know that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't dodgy money, essentially. So it was looking at, you know, they call them high-risk clients, politically exposed persons. Actually, a lot of it coincided with the Arab Spring, so it was potentially sort of overseas politicians involved in some of these regimes where, you know, the FSA wanted a lot more clarity over the money was coming from, and they didn't think Coutts were checking that sufficiently.
Have they put that right?
Well, they say that they have been working ever since the FSA came in and investigated them. Now, this was part of an industry-wide probe. It wasn't just Coutts. And there are a number of other banks that we think could be hit with similar enforcement action from the FSA. We don't know whether there are going to be any more fines, but we know that there are other banks still under scrutiny.
I guess they will all say that since these probes happened that they've put their practices right, and
they say they have been working to, for sure. I mean, for Coutts, this is so important because this is what it stakes its reputation on. You know, it's like this bank that has had quite a prestigious reputation, you know, was very well trusted. And you know, since the financial crisis, it's been just subject to setback after setback.
Had other brushes with the regulators.
They were fined in November, just 4 months ago. They were fined over £6 million for the way that they sold investment bonds. That created a lot of negative publicity because it triggered this whole media campaign led by Sir Keith Mills, the founder of Air Miles, who had a lot of money tied up in these bonds. Also, what's bad about this fine this morning is that Royal Bank of Scotland, which owns Coutts, was already dealt a fine for something fairly similar back in 2010. So this was, again, it was anti-money laundering, but it was related to the money potentially being linked to terrorist organisations. But again, it was critical of the checks. That was part of the similar review that the FSA was doing. But given that RBS was hit previously, you might have hoped that Coutts would have sorted out its own practices a bit faster. Now, as we said, you know, this fine related to its processes up to the end of 2010. So it has had last year to sort things out and says it has made improvements. But the bank is still sort of struggling to regain its footing, really, after the financial crisis. And this will be another setback, unwelcome, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, and as you say, other banks have been investigated, so we may get more news over the coming weeks about actions or even fines against them. We shall watch out for that. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. I need to thank Charlene and Daniel for their contributions and to thank you for listening. Remember, you can keep up to date with all of the latest banking stories at ft.com/banking. Banking Weekly was produced by Martin Staber. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.